Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Pop Culture Confidential, and I'm Christina Yerling Biru. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Ever so often, a great coming-of-age movie, a movie centered on the experiences of teen girls, hits the zeitgeist. Movies that really define and illustrate the pain and glory of adolescence, be it like a Juno or a Lady Bird. Swedish director Mika Gustafsson's new film, Paradise is Burning, really captures just that. That special moment of teen yearning, that space between childhood and adulthood. Her film centers around three sisters, ages 7 to 16. They're played beautifully by newcomers Bianca Del Bravo, Safira Mossberg, and Dilben Assad. The girls are living alone, dodging social services as their mother tends to disappear for longer periods of time. And the film is really resonating. This summer, Gustafsson won the prestigious Best Director Award in the Horizonte section of the Venice Film Festival. And last week, she received the Sutherland Award at the London Film Festival that recognizes the most original and imaginative directorial debut. I recently sat down with Mika at her writer's space that she shares with her collaborator, Alexander Östrand. I asked her what the reactions had been to her movie at the Venice Film Festival.
It was actually some girls like running down to the stage and grabbed Bianca and Dilvin and Safira. And we're like, thank you so much for this film. Thank you so much for your characters. And that was so nice. Like, I was like, you know, sneaking away a little bit, you know, so you can view it. And I was like, this is beautiful.
Do you know what it was they connected with?
I don't know. I think it is. I really hope that I manage what I really wanted to do, that they are human beings, like more complex characters. But I wasn't expecting this feministic reactions. And also, both me and the girls get a lot of, you know, messengers on Instagram and so on. Also on young girls.
We need this.
That's really nice. And I'm really glad.
Teen movies, the good ones are the ones that really show the pain and also the exuberance of what girls and teens are going through. And you've really captured that in your movie. What is it you wanted to really explore with your teens, what they're going through in this movie?
For me, it was really, really, really important that they were human beings. It sounds so simple, but it was really important that these three sisters wasn't, you know, I wanted them to be, it could have been a story about three boys. And I really wanted them to be like, going outside, you know, the limits of how you usually portray girls. And that's the same thing a little bit about age. I wanted this film to be about three characters who's 7, 12 and 16. But I wanted it to have the you know, this existential life or inner, like a great inner life. And that was really, really important. And that it could be seen both from a young and an adult audience. That felt really, really important. And I was thinking, like, you know, if you're an old man, maybe you could identify with Mira, who's 12. I really think if we go, like, into the inner core, I think we all, even if we're 6 years old or 60 or now or 50 years ago, we're still thinking about, like, what is it to be a human being? And what am I doing here? And why am I here? And it's also very simple answer, but I think it's the same. But it could be shown in different way. And of course, it's different in different cultures, in different countries. So I wanted to find something very specific but very universal at the same time.
One of these things that your girls have, not only the sisters but the entire group of teens in this, is like a real camaraderie and a real and things specific to women. They do things regarding their period, and they have little ceremonies that they figured out, and there's dancing, and they, you know, that one teen is pregnant, and they talk about what that means. It's very specific to a group of girls. Is this something that you've based on a group of real characters?
Of course, it's always, when you do something, you're always like, even if it's totally fiction, which is it's, you always borrow like emotions or memories in some kind of way. And of course, this film is also like a, what do you say? No, you don't say honorary, no.
Honoring?
To the girls that you grew up with and who made you who you are. And I think that's something very, very special about the childhood overall, like that these people are the ones that you're very, very close while you're finding yourself. And it's something really, really special with that. But it's also, I think the ceremonies was something that I was talking about, these three ages very early when we start to write.
The sisters' three ages.
Yeah, yeah. And it was something about, you know, being a child and becoming a preteen, you know, it's something, you're leaving something, you go over to something new, and going over from that to child to teenager, and from a teenager to adult. It's something about this, you change skin somehow.
You shed, you go.
Yeah. It's something painful, but at the same time, very much larger than life.
It's also something very beautiful with the community of women, and in this case, very young women who are sort of teaching the next one and the next one and the next one. Something I felt like I didn't have. So almost I was jealous at having an older sister who would tell me that my period or whatever it was was something to celebrate and not just to be scared of, which was quite beautiful that these girls who basically live alone and have difficult situation with their mother being gone actually can help each other.
And that's nice. Yeah. Because I really remember that as something that you learned from someone else, and then you can tell someone else.
Pay
and
it forward, yeah.
Yeah, because I've seen a lot of films, you know, from boy to men. Mm-hmm. It's almost a cliche. And I've seen it a lot. And I've seen beautiful movies like that also that I really, really like. But I was also like, I haven't seen these girls and been taking seriously. So I was really looking, I was really longing for that. Of course, when you work with a script, you work with dramaturgy, and you're like, someone have to change, something has to change. And I was like, I don't want them to be better persons. art could not save them, and they will not be better persons. It's not about that. And it was really hard, because that's the easiest things to use. And it felt really important in the end that it was about something else.
I'm going to get back to the sisters, but do you have cinematic influences, be it teen movies or not?
I mix my influences, like a lot. It could be, you know, as I said before, I like to mix this poetic and punk, you know, sometimes like, Fish Tank by Andrea Arnold, smashed together with Xavier Dolan. It could be playful and existential at the same time.
And another thing that's so, at least in this genre that we're talking about, is the best ones have the best music. I mean, for me, Psychedelic Furs in a John Hughes movie or a needle drop in a Via Coppola movie, just most of the time it can be a memory that you maybe have from that era. I mean, you go from Gasolina, Daddy Yankee, to Morricone. How did you think about your needle drops and music in it?
We collected a lot of stuff, and we had a playlist, and we have this this game together. Me and Alex, we played different songs. That could be, you know, a song that you really like, or a shame song that you're like, I really like this, but it's a little shameful. And then we played
cringe song.
Yeah. And then we can be really, really serious. You know, you show a song that really matters for you. And maybe you cry a little bit. You know, it really matters. And we can be really, you know, dramatic. So we played different songs to each other and talk about different emotions that was important for the films. We're really inspired about the French New Wave. You know, let it be playful. Mm-hmm. What happens if we do that? Can we just like, I was like, ah, I love if we would just cut very hard in the beginning. And then like, dish, 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 I was like, that would be fun. I don't know why. Playful, and sometimes it's very serious. Yeah, and I was fighting a lot for keeping the music.
Let's talk about these incredible sisters. First of all, the three girls that are playing them are non-professional actors, I understand. How did you find them?
Oh, it took a long time. I think the whole casting process in total took 10 months. Bianca, we found her during the writing process, actually. Alex just found her outside the store, and he was out, it was a Sunday, and he was out buying breakfast or something, and he heard this deep voice, and this girl, she was sitting on something and she was talking in the phone, and she was like, Alia, come over here, yeah, you should come, blah blah blah. And he called me and he's like, okay, it's a girl here, she has exactly the energy that you're talking about, it's something, she's odd, she's something else, she has this energy that you talk about when you talk about Laura, I really think she should come. And I was like, no way, I don't have time, like, take her number. And he was like, nah.
That seems weird.
That seems weird.
Do you want a modeling job?
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, no, you should come down, you should come here. Because he's also an actor, and he was playing in this 70 movies. So he also have this super weird mustache from the 70s.
Poor Bianca.
And he was, no, I think, actually, poor Alex, okay. I think. I think he felt really, really stupid. And so he took her number, and yeah, he got it wrong, of course, because he was nervous. And I was like, oh, he came home. I was like, ah, let's call her directly. And I was like, this number doesn't work. And I was like, fuck. And then she was, you know, stuck in my mind a little bit. And then like a year later, we were out having, you know, a walk a talk, like a break from writing. And then I heard like a deep voice and I was like, who's that? That's interesting. And I was like, ah, that's her. It's her.
Wow, it's meant to be.
Yeah, really. And totally for all of the three sisters, I think we casted like over 1,000 girls. Elin Ström, who was the casting director, she made a huge job. And also finding a group. You know, it's a team.
Yeah, they have to work together. And they feel like sisters. How they fight, how they play, how they interact, especially with the little one.
Yeah, yeah. And then when we decided for the three of them, we had 4 months with workshops.
And I understand that you... to have trust with these girls, you like cut your hair in the same style as the little one, so she would feel that there was nothing that she couldn't do that you wouldn't do, which seems like a very amazing trust exercise to do with someone like who doesn't know what this is.
Yeah, I had a really weird haircut.
See that? You sent me a picture.
Yeah, totally.
Although she's super cute, so I'm sure it was.
No, but this was the dumb thing, because she looked really super cute when she cut it, and I was like, this is gonna be good. And then I did, and she laughed.
Okay.
But yeah. Of course, so to show your actors, like, I do anything for you. And you really do. And I also think, like, I mean, young people who act for the first time, they also, young people overall, they are also so curious. So it's a really important job that you do. It's also, like, I really realized, like, I have a big impact of doing something good, but I could also do harm if I don't. So it felt really important. You're learning something for life.
It's interesting. I've seen a few movies now. I don't know if you saw Scrapper. Was it Sundance? It's about a little girl. It's a British movie about a little girl who's also hiding from social services. Mm-hmm. And she reunites with her father, who suddenly comes back while she's sort of trying to make her way. And then a couple of years ago, there was Capernaum. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that, which was about a 12-year-old was living in the slums of Beirut. So there's something about the state of the world today. And in terms of Sweden and bringing this movie out to the world, can you talk a little bit about that, what you meet when you screen this in Italy and what people are thinking of the situation in Sweden?
I think the film is quite much its own world. I haven't got the questions so much about Sweden or the situation in Sweden, but it's more, I think, what is fun when you bring a film out of Sweden and internationally. I think it's very fun because people are very interested in art overall and film. And it feels like I got a lot of different questions, more like, ah, this reference, or I can see, it was someone asked like, ah, when it is a scene in the film that is really similar to a Bo Widerberg scene. Mm-hmm. And he was like, ah, it's a marsh. It's a marsh, right? And I was like, yeah, you saw that. And I think it's a big like interest in ah, these paintings looks like this Botero. What is the connections? And I think that was really fun. And also, and sometimes I actually feel, but I feel that with all of my films, sometimes it's easier internationally than in Sweden. I don't know why, but...
I've heard a lot of people talk about Pippi Longstocking.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
In reference to your movie, yeah, that the girls are on their own. And, yeah, and
but that's quite cute, I think. It's like a dark or a more... A Pippi Longstocking that's also for a wider audience, maybe. This situation about these three sisters, like, yeah, they'd rather be alone without their parents than separated. And I think that it's like a longing for, also for freedom. Or to, it's better to be free than locked up. Or I wanted to film at the same time, like, of course, this is a situation that's not good for them, so maybe it's better for them to get help. I didn't want it to be black or white.
But you were talking about Swedish films, and it saddens me. I was just reading a number that only 10% of the total of a year's ticket sales from Swedes are for Swedish movies. Swedish movies aren't a big thing even for Swedish viewers.
Mm.
It seems a bit in disarray. I'm thinking, and there's a lot of things in the news about Swedish films, and it's such a joy that you won Venice. And what kind of changes would you like to see in the industry, if any, for Sweden?
First of all, the cinemas need to put them up, mm-hmm, so you can see them. First of all, we have a problem that the only, like, art house overall is just set up in I think, four Swedish cities. It's like Malmö, Lund, Gothenburg, Stockholm and Uppsala. The cinemas also have to believe that the Swedish audience wants to see. And it's not just about Swedish film. This is also about artistic film from international, from outside. We need to be interested in film. At least, I mean, trust the audience that they want to see it. And I also think Sweden have a... You need to trust that people want to be surprised. And I think... Sweden is like really, really bad at that. Like trusting the audience, always break rules.
And stories that are outside of maybe what people are used to seeing about Sweden, which give a new insight into what Sweden is today.
Yeah, it's all about politics, actually. Totally. And I think the Swedish film industry could be whatever. It could be whatever we want it to be. And I really see it like that, because I also, you know, I see who gets money and who doesn't. And it's all about the money, mm-hmm, of course. And of course you stop making film in Swedish if you can't. People who leaving the Swedish language, because the other way to get money into your project is making film in English. So it's really... You get what you ask for also. Yeah.
What is your next project?
Ah.
I don't want to turn around, because behind me I have all your post-it notes, and I know that that's the beginning of a movie, I suppose.
Yeah, it is. It is. I'm actually, people are like, okay, so you just came home from Venedig like 2 weeks ago. Why aren't you still in Italy having vacation? And actually, it was they called after we got the award, and they were like, "Do you want to extend the travel 2 days?" And I was like, "No, I need to go home and work." No, but I have actually a lot of energy and to write again. And I also like being a director who goes in to this very closed room, writing room, that is really small. And then you're the director where you have to lead a team of 50 people or even more, or work really close to people all the time. So this loneliness and this really crowdness, I like going back and forth. And now I'm really looking for just being in my room alone.
But this one hasn't even premiered yet. You have to get out there. You're
going
to be doing
we are going to Hamburg next weekend, and then London, and then Chicago, and then a lot of other, like the whole year is going to be traveling. But in between, we're writing again. And I think like this, what can I say about, I think this world, this kind of world of its own, mm-hmm. the young people, that is coming back, mm-hmm. I think, in some kind of way. It's something, more that I want to explore in that world. But it's totally different also.
Thank you so much. And thank you for giving me your time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Mika Gustafsson. Paradise is Burning premieres in Sweden on October 27th and is traveling the world, as you heard Mika said, so make sure to catch it. And thank you so much for listening. Pop Culture Confidential is a part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening. See you next time.
Hey there. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema,
our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe?
Do we even care if they are?
We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com.
See you soon.